Move along home!
Alamarain, Aventhrimor, Alamarain, if you can see Alamarain, you'll come with me.
Alamarain, encounter four, Alamarain, Aventhrimor, Alamarain, if you can see Alamarain, you'll come with me.
Hi, it's time to experience Beesh in this, the Casual Trek Gamer Edition, brought to you by the Nerd and Tie Network and the Qatarian Game, currently reviewed 11 out of 10 everywhere it's been played. I'm Charlie Etheridge Nunn, a writer and a fan of the video game Rock Band.
Hi, I'm Miles Reed Lobato, science fiction writer and a fan of the game Portal 2.
Ooh. Oh, it's been a long time since I've even thought about Portal 2. That was a fun one.
I find Portal 2, I think, beats out Portal by being really good in doing its world building while not taking you out of the gameplay.
Yeah, the storytelling being so in the world is so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah?
It's really immersive, and I really wish that Valve would make more games.
Yeah, that's never gonna happen.
No.
For Rock Band, we had a deep, intricate story, but it was all made up in the heads of my brother and I, as our band, Hackney Crack Raid, channeled their deep violence and hatred towards the audience, mostly at each other, to be honest. But it still helped, you know. Their behind the music sort of thing's gonna... Oh, it's not gonna be comfortable to air on any channel, really.
Was Hackney Crack Raid your dream band name?
It was a name that myself and some of my library studies group came up with when we needed just a random name for a pub quiz. And it felt like a perfect band name.
See, my dream band name was always Communist Death Machine.
Nice.
I don't know what kind of genre it would have been. Part of me likes the idea of it kind of being a sort of neutral milk hotel kind of artsy-fartsy music, just to kind of juxtapose the type of music with the very explicit name of Communist Death Machine.
Of course. Yeah, I think our other name was Two-Headed Klaxon Beast, which was very much in that sort of experimental noise collective sort of band. Anyway, this is sadly not a podcast about Rock Band. If anyone wants to start one, please do that. I do not have the time to do it myself, but I would love to hear that. Anyway, on this Casual Trek, we watch stories from three different Star Trek shows, and we rank them on a big list of best to worst, as we're fans of Star Trek, but also fans of many other things to a much higher level. So that level of kind of borderline, it's all rightness, is...
It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. That's what makes us objective voices on such a task compared to, you know, video game reviews where I gather it has to be 10 out of 10 or the worst thing ever. We're a solid 7 out of 10, I think.
In video games, it has to be 10 out of 10 or else there is no ethics in video game journalism.
God, I swear 2014 made me give up on doing any sort of video game journalism, and I think that's helped my sanity slightly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't play much in the way of video games and not really a gamer, but yeah, it just seems to be too much.
Yes, at board game conventions, whenever people have talked about video games or gone like, hey, are you a big video gamer? Do you play like the League of Legends or anything? I generally lie and say, no, I don't really do video games or anything like that. And it's, again, it's like, oh, non-video gamer Charlie. I wonder if he's a happier man. I think he might be. Anyway, on that slightly sad note,
this is not an esoteric podcast. This is a Star Trek podcast.
Yeah. That said, before we go on, what non-Star Trek thing have you been enjoying since we last spoke?
Well, this is kind of ironic because the thing I've been enjoying, or rather the thing I have to kind of promote, is a video game related thingamabob, because earlier this week I appeared on a live stream for a We've mentioned Two Boobs Run the Tubes, our sister show with Sean Orange, which I've appeared on talking about Doctor Who. He and Vingaros are part of a show called Famicom Dojo, which is a video game related show. And Sean invited me on his stream to watch him and give him moral support while he played Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link on Nintendo Entertainment System.
Oh, God.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a lot of fun. You know, got to watch Sean get further in the game than I ever have, I'll be honest. And if you go to YouTube and look up Famicom Dojo, like and subscribe, and you should see me down there in the more recent videos.
Nice.
And what about you, Charlie? What non-Star Trek thing have you been enjoying lately?
I was trying to think video game-wise, but I've been playing Fire Emblem Engage, and it's fine. It's not quite grasped me the same level that Three Houses did. So instead, I'm going to talk about some analog gaming. As Ooh. Literally moments before doing this podcast, I've been playing a game called Oath, which is it's a board game by the makers of Root. And the idea is that you've got one player who's a chancellor who rules the land, and everyone else starts off as an exile, trying to muster forces, trying to interpret weird visions to lead them to usurping the role of chancellor and winning the game. And it's a weird one because it's not a campaign game, but it's a game where at the end of the game, you put everything back in a very particular order and you futz with the deck of cards that everyone draws from based on how circumstances went. So the chancellor winning and having a lot of arcane powers means that our world deck is now a bit more arcane than it once was.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and all the locations, like there are weird edifices that have been built in some of them, and we've got this one card called Toll Roads, which has been in the game for the last couple of games and has been basically the bane of my life, as it stops people moving without paying the Chancellor, who is asymmetrically more powerful than the rest of us, so we need to work together to bring them down. And it's a fascinating thing. It's a little fiddly, and given we play it once every, 3+ months, remembering all of the little bits of it has been tricky, but hopefully we're at a point where we'll be playing it more regularly and seeing how the story of our kind of chronicle of Empire and Exile continues. So yeah, it's been a nice one.
So on a scale of game complexity, how many Twilights of the Imperium is it?
Ooh, I'd say 0.4 of a Twilight Imperium. The game itself is very simple. It's more of a teardown that is so very specific that it makes it a little tricky. And the combat, we're still kind of getting used to a couple of games in, as there are a lot of conditionals. It's nice. It's fairly nice and has a fun flow to it. Even if I spent most of the latest game kind of yelling at everyone to attack Emma because she was the Chancellor. She appreciated that, I'm sure.
Yeah, fair enough. I've not played much in the way of board games, but I do remember that one evening I went over to your old apartment to play the Battlestar Galactica game. That was a lot of fun.
I love that game. There's a kind of Lovecraft-themed sequel to it, which has been... It's definitely been finessed, but if you want a nice long game that's co-op until it very much isn't, then the BSG version. It's sadly out of print, but it's a very good time.
So is the secret identity in the Lovecraft game who's the stinking racist?
No.
Or is it something boring like who's the fish person?
So it is who's the fish person. However, the roster of characters is so diverse for old HP himself would be spinning in his grave in alpha-generating power. It's amazing. You've got a deaf character, a non-binary character. I think the captain of the ship is Hawaiian. Like, you've got people, like, I don't know if there is just a regular kind of straight, white, able-bodied man in the cast. I think there is, but he's part deep one anyway.
Okay, so based on what I know about the things that H.P. Lovecraft hates, that you're giving me hope that there's a character who is a non-white Jewish person who speaks the Dutch language, thus encompassing all three of H.P. Lovecraft's personal hates.
Oh, dear. Maybe. I've not read the backgrounds of all of them, but yeah, I kind of hope so. It's called Unfathomable, and it is a very good time.
Do you know what's also a good time?
Why what, Mars?
Star Trek!
Yes!
Do you know what's an even better good time?
Go on.
Star Trek episodes about games!
Alan Moraine, count to four. Alan Moraine, then three more. Alan Moraine, if you can't see. Alan Moraine, you come with me.
So, our first episode today is The Game, which, guys, you just lost. And that's from Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 5, Episode 6, aired 28th October 1991. Teleplay by Brannon Braga, from a story by Susan Sackett, Fred Bronson, and Brannon Braga, directed by Corey Allen. Now, the UK and US number one hits, both crackers. The UK number one was that power ballad classic, Everything I Do It For You by Bryan Adams.
I've not even listened to it ahead of this, and it's been stuck in my head for days.
Like, this is a clap. This is 10 out of 10. This is the birth of music. 10 out of 10, no notes. And the US number one was Emotions by Mariah Carey, which was good.
It's all right. It's no Emotion by Carly Rae Jepsen, but it'll do.
Yeah. So, right, tell me when to start, and I shall start.
Okay, engage.
The Enterprise is in a sector of space doing stuff, but before that, they picked up two arrivals. One of them was Wesley Crusher, who's on leave from Starfleet Academy, and Commander Riker, who has just come back from shore leave on Risa, the sex planet. But he's got something that he wants to share with the crew. Is it the clap again? No, not this time. It's a game. You put it on your head, and you basically see Candy Crush. The game is basically 1990s crappy Candy Crush. And every time you make a point, you do a little O-face. So if you ever wanted to see Jonathan Frakes' O-face, you're gonna see it quite a bit in this episode. Meanwhile, while Wesley is just kind of reacquainting himself with the ship and getting in, you know, he's helping out because, you know what you like doing on your time off from college? College work.
Such a nerd.
Such a nerd. But he also meets another nerd who is Ensign Robin Leffer, who, you know, they kind of spark it off. You know, he's all, I'm about science and stuff, and she's like, yeah, I'm a maverick who plays by my own rules. I have a big book of them. 102 of them, to be precise. And no, they're having like a little kind of, you know, cute thing. Meanwhile, the game that Riker brought back with him is really popular. It's frighteningly popular. Like, he is pushing everyone to play it. It's almost as if the game might just be really addictive. Meanwhile, Data is attacked by Riker, Troy, and Crusher, who promptly deactivate him, and thus rendering him unable to help. Well, Wesley starts getting kind of creeped out when he catches his mother playing the game, and she starts to really push it on him. Push, you know, she's pushing it like it's some kind of drug. Huh? Get it? Get it? Get it? Anyway, Wesley and Robin and now thoroughly freaked out, and they're doing some research on the game headset, and they find out that the game creates an addictive effect. Wesley goes, right, I'm taking this to the top, and he goes to Picard, but what he doesn't know is, oh no, they got Picard as well, he's also addicted to the game. And one by one, the crew is being just taken over by the game. And Wesley and Robin realize that the reason that Data was taken out is since he has no pleasure centers to affect, he is immune to the addictive brainwashing effects of the drug game. Sorry, did I say drug? Never mind. The Enterprise meets up with another ship, which is led by the alien who gave Riker the game in the first place, through pretend to seduce Riker to get him involved. And I guess they want to spread the game throughout Starfleet and the Federation, using the Enterprise to push it. All they have to do is track down Wesley, and they find him with Robin in Wesley's quarters playing the game. Oh no, they've been got. Oh wait, they're actually pretending to play using fake headsets, which they don't wear ever again, which seems like a bit of a giveaway that they're not on board. Robin goes down to engineering to try and work something out. Wesley has his own plans. He meets Robin in engineering, and it takes him about 5 seconds to realize, oh wait, she's been got. And everyone starts chasing Wesley throughout the ship. You know, we get some nice Jeffrey Tubes action, but it's to no avail. Wesley is caught, and he's dragged to the bridge, and everyone kind of crowds over him to make him play the game, and so we can see Will Wheaton's kind of sad little O-face as he plays the game, proper orange style. But thankfully, Data storms onto the bridge. It was all a diversion. Wesley was...
Terrible. And yeah, God, Will Wheaton's sad little O-face sounds like a terrible name for a band.
That's an emo band.
Definitely.
Data, start the timer. Data storms onto the bridge with a little flicky light, which warning. If you're photosensitive to bright flashing lights, you know, keep a wide berth of this one. Data flashes everyone with the flicky lights, and that was enough to help break their addiction to the game. Everyone recovers, and they promptly tractor beam the alien ship to escort it to nearest starbase, having effectively saved the Federation on his half term. Wesley, you know, says goodbye to Robin and promises to keep in touch. But you know what? Having saved the Federation and pulled in the space of 40 minutes, I don't think it's going to last. The end.
Oh, wow. Okay, a minute and a second.
Charlie, I have a question for you.
Oh?
How much are you aware of the war against drugs as pushed by Reagan's White House in the 80s? And just the general puritanical attitude towards drugs in the US, which has been pushed as a way to incarcerate non-white people, shall we say.
As an Englishman who has never lived or even visited the US, I am distressingly aware.
Okay, good. Oh my god, this was...
I remember loving this one. And yeah, it's interesting going back to it as an adult.
Yeah. Technically, I think this might be our first Wesley-centric episode.
Unless you count Data Law, where he was the only one noticing the obvious evil going on in Law.
Yeah, that's fair. But yeah, just...
Miles.
Like, dude... yeah.
Is the video game making them come?
I hope not, because that would just be really awkward in the workplace.
It really would.
Maybe that's what makes the game so addictive. It's not making them come, but it's just edging them really hard.
Oh, no.
We're going, this game is basically, I think this game is actually called No Nut November, the game.
I mean, say all you like about the game. It, at least it doesn't have microtransactions or a season pass or anything like that. You know, it's free to play.
Oh, no. I think out of all the games we're going to see in this episode, this is the least microtransactional. But you know that it was made using AI programming.
Definitely. I have another question.
Okay.
Have Brannon Braga, Susan Sackett, or Fred Bronson ever played a video game?
I think one of them has probably had like a really bad Tetris addiction on Game Boy for like a couple of weeks, and now is enough to scare them off. Mm. But this feels like the most boomer Star Trek has gotten for a while on the show. These kids with their video games, they're addictive. They must be evil.
But what if, instead of those damn kids playing their games, it was the adults? Ooh.
Oh, that was... Ooh. See, the best part was when Dr. Crusher was trying to push the game on Wesley, thus, you know, committing the one thing every parent should never do, which is try and be hip with the kids, because the kids won't appreciate it.
I mean, if not for that, maybe he'd have tried it, though. So, you know, that's...
No, that's true. I do have some questions. How do they get Geordi, who is blind, and I don't know if the game would work with the visor, and how the hell did they get Worf to play? Because Worf is the least fun person on that ship.
God, yeah, he would hate the idea of having a nice bit of fun. You'd have to lie to him. You know, look, here's some tedious busy work. Do it.
Oh no, it's like it helps your hand-eye coordination. I've heard that excuse for video games before.
Hey, as someone that was diagnosed dyspraxic at 9, I was told, get this kid playing video games because it will help with the hand-eye coordination, and it's been an excuse I've used ever since.
Fair enough. This is it's stupid, but like it's fun stupid.
Yes, yeah, we're ragging on it for the Reaganomics kind of, you know, like boomer ass mentality of the video game addiction and all that, but it that doesn't stop it being fun.
No, like my one problem is like this nearly worked. Like this plan to topple the Federation pretty much would have worked if it weren't for those meddling kids.
I mean, how many times has that been the case?
Yeah, but an addictive video game, the Federation kind of deserves to fall if that's what nearly gets them.
God, maybe this is why they're so disillusioned in Picard. They're like, did you realize how many times meddling kids have saved this entire project?
So was Wesley Crusher being in Starfleet the one thing that was keeping the Federation from collapsing?
Oh God, and then he left, and then it was all downhill from there. Like, no one's got a kid getting into hijinks. Not to that level.
I have an interesting theory. I think that the actors who have definitely partaken in some form of drug were very much more evident on screen than you had some extras who were kind of, who clearly have always said no, who were lying around like they were in a heroin overdose. and you got some who are just like, yeah, I'm kind of stoned, man.
I wanted to see more of like Picard being more out of it on video games. I felt that could have been done a bit more.
So you posited a theory to me that this is a story that Wesley tells people at Starfleet Academy.
Yeah.
To brag.
Oh yeah, what did you do on your half term? Well, I just did work like a good nerd, but there was
Oi.
an addictive video game, and I stopped it. I saved the flagship. I saved all of Starfleet, and I pulled Ashley Judd. Thank you very much. Yeah, I think this is recounted. Maybe it didn't happen
And then
quite like this, but you know, this is how Wesley would tell it before being, you
maybe
know,
not every
hogwashed
syllable.
or yeah.
Maybe how it actually happened was Riker came back from Riser, and Picard goes, "How was Riser? Fine. Did you get addicted to any video games? Yes. All right, go to the doctor." And then the entire plan collapsed within 5 minutes. But Wesley was like, I see some social clout, and I'm gonna use it to my advantage, and I'm gonna tell them that Picard patted me on the head and said that I was his real dad and everything."
Yeah, and everyone applauded, even Worf.
Everyone applauded, even Worf. And I didn't pull anybody.
No. Oh. Yeah, Leffler's an odd one. She's someone who's kind of stuck in the consciousness a bit. I know she was part of Peter David's whole New Frontier series for a while.
Yeah, like, is she a one-time count, like, in a one-time, like, is this her one appearance in the show, or is she like a occasionally recurring character?
Apparently, this is her second and last appearance.
Oh.
Yeah.
The Wesley Crusher kiss of death.
Yes. Yeah. It's
Th there's an there's another emo band name for you.
Wow. Okay. Is any band based on Wesley Crusher going to be an emo band? And the
I
sad
don't
thing
know,
is he's
maybe.
far too nerdy for that. Like, not even emo nerdy.
He would definitely be into math rock.
Yes.
I think he would definitely be math rock. Yeah. See, let's be honest. Wesley Crusher's favorite band is probably They Might Be Giants, which I've seen They Might Be Giants play live, so I can't argue with that.
Yeah, that's fair. They're quite good. Right. So, with all that said, we have a giant list, and our game here is to place this episode somewhere on that list of best to worst. At the moment, we have DS9's Emissary in the number one spot. We have, let's see, around the midpoint, around the number 20, we have Genesis from TNG, where Barclay becomes a Spider-Man. And finally, at the very bottom, we have Enterprise's Future Tense, where nothing is executed well and some interesting premises are wasted. So, with all of that, where do you reckon the game goes?
Ooh, like
And this was definitely a good TNG.
it was like it's bad, but it's still fun.
Yeah.
Like the fear mongering about video games aside, and just the video games equal drugs was kind of ridiculous, but at the same time, it's a dumb enough riff on Invasion of the Body Snatchers that it's still kind of fun to watch. Like the moment when Wesley sits down in engineering and doesn't realize that Robin has immediately been got within 2 minutes. Like, she was gone for 2 minutes, and she couldn't even manage five.
He's not a fast lad, is he?
No, and like they have the fake headsets and then never wear the fake headsets. Instead, just walking around loudly saying what they're going to do in crowded bars.
Yeah, now Wesley might not have had that lesson of avoiding that sort of thing, but Robin's an ensign. She should have known better at this point.
Yeah. So I'm definitely gonna say it's I think it's worse than Genesis.
Yeah. Similar vibe, but Genesis does a lot more with it.
Our lowest ranked TNG episode is Encounter at Farpoint at episode 31. Is this better or worse than Encounter at Farpoint?
I think it's better, definitely.
Yeah. I think it's... I would say I think this is better. That this is definitely better than, say, The Changeling.
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
Which is at number 29.
Okay.
But, like, do you think this is better or worse than Cat's Paw at number 28?
Oh, that's a difficult one. Both are entertainingly wacky in different ways.
Yeah. But again, I think I would definitely watch this one more than I would probably watch Cat's Paw.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, after that we've got Coda.
Willie's immediately... Yeah, Willie is right behind me, because I think he heard me talking smack about Cat's Paw.
Uh-oh.
And he's just like, the hell you say? That's okay. I am giving him scritches, which is soothing the savage ship's cat. It's okay, Willy. You think Cat's Paw is the best episode of Star Trek ever made. I respect your opinion.
Okay, so is this better than Janeway's time loops and her weird ghost dad?
I would say so, honestly.
Yeah.
And that's at number 27.
Yeah, yeah. I think after that we've got Treachery, Faith, and the Great River, which has both shenanigans and some nice depth to it. I think it's going to have some trouble beating that.
I don't think it's going to beat that, because I love the O'Brien Nog subplot.
Oh my
god! With all the scrounging and
oh, it's so much fun.
So, shall we say number 27?
Let's. Okay. All right. So. Excellent, and there it goes, number 27. Also, today's episode of DS9, which we'll get onto in a moment, doesn't have any O'Brien in it, so it was even more appreciated that the game featured O'Brien as well.
I forgot that O'Brien comes in completely strung out on game.
God, we even get his POV at one point as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh. At least he didn't give out a little Begora when he scored a point.
Yeah, I don't see O'Brien's Begora face.
No, no one wants to see O'Brien's Begora face. Not even O'Brien.
Alan Moraine, count to four. Alan Moraine, then three more. Alan Moraine, if you can see, Alan Moraine, you'll come with me. Ugh.
Right, well, Alan Moraine!
Alan Moraine!
Welcome! It's time for our second episode of the night, which is Star Trek DS9 Season 1, Episode 10, Move Along Home, a frequent entry in the worst Star Trek episodes list, which is frankly shocking, having seen it now. It aired on the 14th of March, 1993. Teleplay by Frederick Rappaport, Lisa Rich, and Jan Carrigan-Fauci. Story by Michael Piller, and directed by David Carson. And where we had two good songs before for the UK and US number one hits, oh! How the tables have turned. The UK had Unlimited with No Limit, which was everywhere and was constantly mocked. My music teacher back in secondary school used to call them too untalented.
Wow.
An easy dunk, really. Yeah, fittingly, a man named Mr. Hater, who, was a joy.
Did he go on to be the character of a popular series of espionage video games by Hideo Kojima?
Alas, I don't think he was that hater. I really should remember his first name, but yeah, he couldn't do that voice, at least, the snake voice. Oh, that would have been amazing.
Crab battle.
Anyway, so there's that from the UK, and the US number one hit was Informer by Snow.
Yeah.
It's hard to say who had it better there.
All right. So, do you think you're ready?
I think I might be ready to move along home.
All right. So, I have set the timer, and Alan Moraine, move! Move along home!
Alan Moraine! Okay, so, Cisco is trying out his dress uniform while getting criticized by his son. Apparently, baggy clothes are popular on Bajor, and Jake's aware as he's been ogling the Bajoran girls arriving at the station, and Nog has given him the talk, which is really worrying. Just be prepared for him to go to some terrible pickup artist places. Anyway, the episode isn't about any of this. It's about the Wadi. And who are they? Well, there are people in the Gamma Quadrant who the Vulcans made first contact with, and they're arriving on DS9 for a bit of a tour. Sisko wants to dress the part, and he wants everyone to do likewise. Unfortunately, Bashir has fucked it up once again. He's misplaced his dress uniform, and just has to look like regular old Bashir, where everyone else has taken it, you know, a bit seriously. The Wadi don't care. They arrive, and I've definitely played board games with all of these people at conventions and had distressing drunken late night conversations with a lot of them. They are not interested in pleasantries, but they want to play some games. They've heard Quarks is the place to be. I assume he has people pamphleting the whole Gamma Quadrant. And yeah, Quarks loving this. He does try to find out whether or not the Wadi care about money, because he doesn't want another Federation situation. And they seem to use some kind of barter, initially for breadsticks and for some foul-tasting juice. After that, Fallow, their leader, offers some gems, and Quark's a much happier man. Hours and hours pass in Quark's bar, and Sisko's propping up the bar, making sure the Wadi are right, but he's fucking tired of it at this point. They've been incorrigible. They've been unable to stop playing games, to the point where Quark replaces the exhausted Dabber girl with a Frankie mate of his and cheats on the boards for Wadi Luz. They are not impressed, and they summon a game of their own. A big, weird, triangular thing with some odd pieces on it called Chula! As all this happens, Sisko wakes up somewhere else. It's not the Hollow Suite. There's no computer responding to him. It's endless hallways, like a corridor-based version of the Cube from the film The Cube. Fallow is there for a moment and says, "Move along home!" before vanishing. There's some incredible screaming going on, and it turns out it's Bashir, who's trying to wake himself up and failing really badly because he ain't asleep. He's really here. His screams manage to summon Dax and Kira as well. And everyone but Kira is fine with this. This is standard nonsense from a new civilization. Kira is in admin. She shouldn't have to deal with this kind of nonsense. And is very annoyed that Starfleet are kind of happy about doing all this kind of thing. Or at least, you know, fine with it. Sisko and the others hear a child singing. But don't worry. It's not in a horror movie way. It's a game. It's a hopscotch-based game called Alan Moraine. I play a lot of weird indie RPGs involving things like Jenga or repurposing a Cluedo board. I'm not fazed by your game having to incorporate some sort of hopscotch round. I'm sure there are some LARPs that do that. They realise they have to copy the Illusory Girl's song and footsteps with it when she hops across the room. Sisko's the only one really putting his heart into it, though. The rest really should do better. Anyway, they complete it. They level up. Hurrah! Back in the bar. Back in the bar. Quark gets some money or some gems as a reward, and Odo pops by, sees the game going off, and the pair realize the four playing pieces in the game are the kidnapped crew. Best play a little bit safer here. The next level is a party with everyone laughing and drinking. And when the room is sprayed with some horrid choking gas, Bashir realizes the drinks are an antidote. Challenge solved. Next level. Quark rolls poorly, but is rolling four-sided dice, and we all know they are the worst of all of the dice. The next challenge involves some glowing lights, which chase everyone. They sense Bashir's innate weakness and whisk him away. Next up, Odo blows on the dice for luck and rolls sacrifice. One of the playing pieces must die, so two live, or they'll all die. Quark has a real breakdown at the prospect of actually killing someone through his actions. And Fallow says, don't worry, we'll roll randomly for it instead.
Alamarine! That's 5 minutes.
Alamarine!
Alamarine! You don't succeed, you go to Third Chula.
Oh no, not Third Chula.
Right, I am starting the stopwatch.
Okay.
And Alamarine, move along home.
Okay, let's bring it home here. So, yes, Quark's mini breakdown. And yeah, it's randomized who's going to be sacrificed. So even we, the audience, don't know who it's going to be. Back in the game, there's a distant noise of Bashir calling out to the others. It sounds a bit too competent, and yet they still fall for the illusion. They chase after him into a rocky cave, and Dax is injured by some rocks and asks to be left behind, but Sisko and Kira won't do that. The trio make their way deeper down into darker caves, more rumbling and shaking, and across some narrow ledges and almost to safety before rocks fall and everyone dies. A total party kill. I have done this before. It never feels good. Anyway, after all that, Sisko, Kira, Dax, and Bashir are all teleported back into the bar. They're alive. They're safe. It was a game. Of course they're safe. It was all just a game. Fallow suggests maybe one day they'll have a rematch and they might even win. When Quark realizes all of this was non-lethal, and, you know, maybe if you'd have said that ahead of time, people would have had some fun with it rather than going through assuming they're going to be the cubed. Then, yeah, he senses business opportunity, chases after Vawadi looking for licensing opportunities. And, yeah, there you go. That's it.
Alamarain! 1 minute, 39 seconds.
Alamarain! Yeah, this was a whole lot of nonsense.
I think it manages to be dumber than the game.
Somehow, yes. Yeah, this was a very dumb episode. And DS9 at this point is playing with TNG level things. It doesn't quite know what its unique selling points are. And it's not quite got for Ron Moore, you know, oh, it's going to be a little bit darker, a little bit more edge to it. So I think this is why people go, this is a bad DS9. And it may be a bad DS9, but it is some wacky hijinks. And if it was in the original series or TNG, I think people would give it a lot more credit.
Yeah, that said, I don't think it would have been as much fun if it was a TNG episode.
Yeah, like, I rag on Bashir for being obviously the worst at all of this and an incompetent, but he is still a favourite character of mine, partly because of that.
Yeah, I love how Kira just has no fucks to give.
Well, it's like crossover, where, you know, anyone Starfleet is like, oh yeah, parallel universe, yeah, been there, done that.
This is Tuesday.
Exactly. And she's like, what the fuck? What the fuck is all of this? I shouldn't have to deal with this. I've got enough business filling in forms.
I am clearly admin. This is not admin.
No, none of this is admin. So yeah, I don't know if she'd have been a bit more receptive if she knew that it was non-lethal. I think she'd have been about the same.
I think she'd be less infused. Yeah.
So yeah, it's a weird one. And yeah, I've definitely had slightly distressing drunken oversharing from people that look like Fallow in my time. I don't know how much you've been into conventions and seen your Fallow and Wadi type folks.
I have seen some strange things at American anime conventions in the Midwest. I don't think I've seen glam forehead tattoos.
Oh, I mean, okay, I've not quite seen the glam forehead tattoos, but I'm sure it's only a matter of time. So, it feels like a bit of a LARP, maybe, you know, a nice high-tech one. Like, you hear about, I don't know if you know much about the Norwegian LARP scene, but...
No!
So, a lot of it is one-shot kind of one thing, one and done. But you get things like hiring out like an old like ship, an old liner or anything like that, and go, okay, we're doing a BSG LARP, or hiring out a castle and doing a, you know, we're doing non-copyright infringing, non-transphobic wizard school LARP kind of thing.
Gotcha.
Where the kids can all muck right. around and the adults are all quest givers or weird cleaners or anything like that. So you get, you know, kind of a weird amount of tech and props and location all for something like that. And I could imagine this being a kind of slightly more fun The Cube LARP almost, you know, or if you had your VR tech, that sort of thing. I mean, if so, it's a bit janky and a bit busted, because what were they going to do against the glowy lights, you know?
I liked your, you know, I also thought of the Canadian horror film Cube while watching the episode as well.
Oh, it's a good fun one, The Cube. And while they couldn't go full The Cube with this, the moment that they were like, endless corridors, I was like, yes! Yes, you're the cubing it.
Sadly, they didn't cube to hypercube it.
Oh, you don't want a hypercube.
Never hypercube. Okay, so the Starfleet officer who Odo talks to.
Oh my god, yes.
According to Memory Alpha, is called George Primin.
Yep.
Who I what a little turd. What a smug little turd.
Yeah, man. I made specific note in my notes about this, and then in trying to keep things brief, decided to avoid it, going, yeah, this guy is annoying and overly familiar. Yeah. I'm not keen on him. Odo must be fucking livid. He is the exact opposite of anything Odo likes. He's weirdly cheerful. And we know Odo doesn't care for that kind of behavior.
No. I did like the little scene with Sisko and Jake.
Yeah, I kind of expected, I was prepared, starting out my notes, and it's been a very long time since I saw this. And I was like, is this going to be a B-plot where he needs to, like, deprogram Jake from, like, some real shitty MRA opinions that Nog's going to have given him?
But no. You know, if that was the choice, Sisko would have put him in the game straight away. You're going in the game until you respect women, young man.
Oh, but God.
This might be the worst episode of DS9 we've watched so far.
Yeah,
which,
I mean, it was...
Which kind of shows that we have been stacking the deck in our DS9 favour.
Definitely. Like, it's the worst of what we've seen. But I enjoyed it far more than I thought I would for something that is on a regular feature on worst of lists.
So how quickly do you think Dominion conquered the Wadi?
I think if we would have seen this later, like if they'd have started hashing out the Dominion stuff early in season one, they would have hinted that they've hit some kind of amicable state with them, or like tithe a lot of their weird breadsticks or anything along those lines. But yeah, like I can't imagine them putting any resistance up for Dominion.
I can imagine that the Wayunes would really enjoy playing Chula.
Mm.
I just imagine like seeing six or seven Wayunes just all Alamoraining all over the place.
I think the Wadi do appear in Lower Decks. As well.
They do. It's one of my favorite lines. It's in season three when Boimler and Mariner are basically at a job fair trying to promote Starfleet to people, and Boimler just gets really pissed off and just screams at goes, "You are the people who trap people in games! Stop trapping people in games!" that's the sequence when Boimler loses his shit and starts screaming at people. My wife and I quote to each other all the time. Especially, "You're trapping people in games. Stop trapping people in games."
I mean, you do have to tell them.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, they will keep doing it.
You just worry that they trap, like, they go, like, if they went to the Klingon Empire with this bullshit, it would not end well.
No,
there would be some dead Wadi.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You put some Klingons in, and they'd try and murder the child. They'd try and murder the party and be like, well, we all choked to death in the party because we didn't even drink the alcohol.
So the drinks. The Klingons would be playing, like, the evil campaign?
Yeah, yeah, maybe. I don't know. There's probably no honor in killing a child doing hopscotch, but maybe some light threatening.
Look, everyone knows that the Klingons take hopscotch very honorably.
Of course, of course. So, yeah, they might get through the Alamarain round, but, yeah, maybe not the booze round.
And the Vulcans just having, like, the most boring time, the most tedious time.
Oh, my God. They'd be the kind of people that would be incredibly joyless with all of this. You know, well, yes, obviously this is a game. The optimal way to hopscotch is not that way, child.
No, don't. The hand gestures are very illogical.
Yes, that song, it makes no sense. We don't care for it at all. I think fun, but yeah, it's not really figured out what a DS9 is yet. So on our big list, our lowest ranked DS9 is Treachery, Faith, and a Great River. So back to spot number 26 for some Weyoun versus Weyoun fun. And yeah, again, that says a lot because that is good. And, you know, we have definitely stacked the list pretty positively so far, which is ominous for our future. Right below it, we have coincidentally just put The Game. Is this better or worse than The Game?
I mean, as you said, this episode does crop up in the worst Star Trek of all time lists. But, you know, this is why we're here. This is the mission statement.
Yeah, I mean, those lists aren't anything, really. Those lists are bollocks. This is the objective list.
The objective list.
Damn straight. Because such things exist.
Is watching Kira just joylessly hopscotching, intoning Alamarain more enjoyable than Wesley Crusher's sad little O-face?
Oh. Every time you say that, it's just part of me dies inside.
Answer the question, Charlie.
Title either. That can't. It's tempting, but Jesus. So watching them Alamaraining their way across, I did love that Avery Brooks was the only one putting any heart into it.
Definitely, and he's gone on record as saying how much he hated it.
Oh God, yeah, but like Avery Brooks is the kind of man who would still put energy into it.
Like especially since he has a very clearly lovely singing voice.
Yes, yeah, where it's like if I was trying to do a reading from a script or something with Kira. There. It's like, oh no, can you sound flatter while doing this?
I know we joke about how in Encounter at Farpoint, you can actually see Patrick Stewart imagining his career dying in real time as we watch the episode progress.
Mm.
And I think you can kind of see that in Nanar Visitor's voice expression as well. Like, as she's hopscotching, she's thinking, my career is over.
Yeah. I think it is that difficult thing where I had about as much fun with both, but I think the performances were definitely, you know, those guys had a good 5 seasons. Well, a good 4 seasons and change in TNG to kind of relax into the roles a bit. And it felt, even though there were some weird presentations of video game addiction in The Game, I don't know, this, it does suffer from not quite being there yet.
Yeah.
So it's probably just about losing to The Game.
All right. Is this better or worse than Encounter at Farpoint?
Oh, God. Oh, the classic question about any Star Trek episode.
What if the Wadi met Grappler Zorn and his prog rock band?
Oh my god, well, there you go, fanfic writers. There's a challenge for you. I mean, no, he'd use them for evil. You know, they're misguided. They're not great, but they're at least, you know, they're not evil or selfish with
it. They're about having a good time.
Yes, yeah, and I feel he'd pervert that slightly.
Yeah.
Okay, can I do anything unscrupulous with this for my own profit? You know, do you need some kind of manager for the game?
I will give one shout out for acting in this episode, and that's Armin Shimerman as Quark. Especially when he has his little breakdown.
Yes. Oh, that breakdown was like realizing, yeah, Quark's, you know, he's probably inadvertently led to a death or two, you know. And will do in the future as well. But yeah, he may be an unscrupulous person, but he's never had to deal with this sort of thing.
Yeah.
He's never had to, like, weigh a life. I think it might be better than Encounter at Farpoint.
To be honest.
I think it might just... because, yeah, Encounter at Farpoint gives us some legendary cast members, but it doesn't necessarily give us some good acting, which puts it on a level with this. And the games here are very stupid, but, you know... no more stupid than PowerPoint.
So, shall we say number 32?
Let's. So that's still, you know, it's still a good high spot for, you know, PS9.
For, like, out of 42, soon to be 43, 32 out of 43, it's not great, but it's still not future tense, which is our worst ranking episode on the list so far.
Yes.
Alamar Rain, count to four. Alamar Rain, then three more. Alamar Rain, if you can see. Alamar Rain, you'll come with me.
But now, I believe, Charlie, it is now time to move along home for our third and final episode.
Yes, it is difficult not just randomly shouting Alamar Rain now, I realise.
Alamar Rain!
Alamarain! It's now time for the final episode of the night. And what are you bringing us for our final game of the evening?
We have a Lower Decks Season 3, Episode 2, The Least Dangerous Game. I wonder if that's a reference. It aired 1st of September 2022, written by Garrick Bernard and directed by Michael Mullen, and the UK and US number one hits. For the UK, we had Afraid to Feel by LF System. It was good. I enjoyed it.
Oh, wow. This is a rare one where I actually forgot to check it out. So I'll have to keep an eye out for that one.
And then we had in the US, we had Super Freaky Girl by Nicki Minaj.
Yeah.
I'll say this about Nicki Minaj. She's not Ed Sheeran.
Yeah. There you go. There's some faint praise.
Like, under Harry Styles, but above Ed Sheeran.
Yeah. God, that Harry Styles one from the other week has still been in my head, that bloody thing.
Just annoys me.
Mm?
That we're never going to get, like, a top 10 number one hit for any of the modern episodes from bands that I like.
No.
Like, I'm never going to get to say, and then the US number one hit was Training Montage by the Mountain Goats.
Yeah, God, this is the terrible, you know, two white guys in their late 30s, early 40s with a podcast thing to go. My thought was Mountain Goats with Foreign Object, but yeah.
Oh! But this is not a Mountain Goats podcast. That exists. It's called I Only Listen to the Mountain Goats by the people who did Welcome to Night Vale, which is a not bad podcast. Wish I did more of it. But anyway, Charlie, since this is an animated episode at 25 minutes, Do I get five? Do I get a full 5 minutes, or do I have to do it in difficult mode?
Do you want to do it in difficult mode?
I always want to do it in difficult mode.
Okay.
Because if I do, because it has the highest risks, but also the biggest rewards.
Wow. Okay.
Alan Moraine,
what are we talking for hard mode here? What do you want?
Let's see. 2.5 minutes?
Let's do it. Okay. And there we go. And press start to play.
We open with a Klingon, General Martok, telling us to fight and die honorably. Is this real life? No! It's a game. It's Batlefs and Bacarts, a D&D-style Klingon role-playing game, which is being played by our hero, the Lower Deckers. They are above a planet which is all about fitness, bruh, and they have some problems with their orbital elevators, thus making it impossible for people to get to and from the planet because the atmosphere prevents transporters being used. Mariner has to go and be briefed by Commander Quinn from Sliders. His name's Ransom, but he's played by Jerry O'Connell, so in my mind, he's always Commander Quinn from Sliders.
Fair.
And she's kind of feeling... Right, in this season, she's trying to play more by the rules because this is her last chance in Starfleet. So she wants to make a good impression, but Ransom's very much, I want you to be early for the mission briefing, is starting to chafe. Meanwhile, Boimler has found out that a Boilean crewmate he had, who was a bit of a screw-up, has made his way to the captaincy by stepping up in the correct situation, and he's starting to feel kind of bummed out because everything he's planned to kind of get to that point has backfired on him. Tendi says, hey, maybe you should just be more kind of open and just say yes more to people, and Boimler starts doing that. And it starts to go really well for him until it doesn't. Stick a pin in that. Ransom, Mariner, Rutherford, and Billups head down to the orbital elevator. They're going to split into two teams. One will go and talk to the people on the planet who are all into kissing and parties, and the other people will stay here and fix the orbital elevator. Ransom tells the engineers, who can fix this in 5 minutes, to go down and do the diplomatic work. Mariner's annoyed, but she has to listen to what Ransom says. It starts to not go well when Billups and Rutherford say the wrong thing, and the people of the planet discover that they don't in fact lift, and it's getting worse.
Game over. Continue?
Yes.
Okay.
And so, they are going. So, Billups and Rutherford are going to be sacrificed to either a living volcano, a sentient computer, or a telepathic baby. We're not sure which. Mariner breaks from her orders from Commander Quinn from Sliders to skydive down to the planet using, like, the atmosphere skydiving gear from the Kelvin Trek films. And she's just about to make it, but Ransom gets in the communicator and going, yeah, I just swapped this around to kind of push you to see if you would follow orders, and you're following orders, and I'm kind of pleased about that. Immediately feeling guilty, Mariner gets back on the skylift and runs back up to meet Ransom so they can skydive back down to the planet again. They arrive just as Billups and Rutherford about to be sacrificed, and it isn't a confusion between a sentient volcano, a living computer, and a telepathic baby. It's all free. They provide a system of checks and balances. I live in the US. I find that amusing. And Commander Quinn from Sliders saves the situation by ripping off his shirt to reveal that he is the most jacked of everyone on the planet, and the day is saved. Meanwhile, on the Cerritos, Boimler meets a guy who looks like Garrus from the Mass Effect games, who asks him if he wants to be hunted, and Boimler says yes. And so Boimler is hunted by a 6-foot-tall, toothy alien monster. It goes just where you expect until Boimler is convinced by hiding with the Klingon RPG to stand up and fight. And so he gets tooled up, he gets a phaser rifle, he gets an equipment pouch, he puts grease on his face for no reason because the Cerritos is brightly lit. He confronts his opponent, the man who is trying to hunt him, and gets a spear through his shoulder for his troubles. It turns out that the aliens practice a catch-and-release attitude to hunting, and he's not going to kill him. He's just going to pull out a selfie stick and take a photo of the two of them, and he's really happy that Boimler helped him out and will recommend what he did to the captain, and Boimler is happy and falls unconscious. Both A and B plots meet up at the end, and while Mariner is kind of pissed at Commander Quinn from Slider's attitude, Boimler realizes that it's good to kind of be a bit bolder, and he is going to be Bold Boimler from now on.
Wow. Yeah, and that's Bold Boimler kind of becomes a catchword for season three, like, Boimler
does go through, you know, I like the fact that, you know, Boimler and Mariner do go through sufficient arcs in the show.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, first of all, that was 3 minutes, 1 second. Well, 1.39 seconds, which, man, you know, effectively that's just 1 second over.
If I had stuck with the full five minutes, I would have done it. I would have failed, but I wouldn't have failed so drastically.
See, now, when I play Rock Band, while I've worked my way up gradually to become expert on guitar with a lot of things, I will bring it back down to hard mode, especially if I'm drinking, because I'm here for fun. I don't need to beat a video game. My esteem isn't there. I just want to enjoy myself.
This is the most on Alan Moraine.
It is. Well, that said, this feels like the same sort of deal of maybe do some research, maybe find out, is this a lethal game?
If Boimler had taken 2 minutes to read up on this species, like, the B plot would not have happened as it did.
Yeah, if he'd have asked Jeeves, then he would have been like, oh yeah, Crunch and his people, catch and release, nice. And it'd be like, okay, this is going to be mildly terrifying, but at least I'm not going to die.
It doesn't help that Tendi, who's usually the kind of the most centered of the four of them, when he says yes, her reaction is, what are you doing? Run! Run!
Yes. Yeah, that probably didn't help.
I love the Tendi Boimler dynamic, and I wish we get it more in the show.
Hmm.
Like, they have a nice little friendship, which it seems to be like the least weird out of like the main friendships.
Yeah, I wonder if there's an amount of that as the reason why they're not put together as often.
Maybe. Like,
And what? Did you notice that there is not just one game in this, but we get two?
I did not. What was the second game?
The second was DS9's own Spring Ball.
Yes, of course.
I just wrote it down as Space Squash because I couldn't remember. But then had a quick look up to go, this is a thing, right? And it is apparently way more of a thing than I remembered at all in DS9.
Yeah, Spring Ball. I love the I loved Boimler being in the whale in the dirge band.
God, yes. Dirge band would be a terrible video game.
What about God. What were those monks who were really popular in the 90s?
Oh, like Gregorian Chant.
There we go. Now Gregorian Chant Band.
You'd have to have like online multiplayer for that because it's not a solo game.
Okay, one more question about Rock Band. Did you play Beatles Rock Band?
Hell yes, I played Beatles Rock Band.
And were you the John, Paul, George, or the Ringo?
I'm trying to remember now. What would happen would be my brother, my friend Andy, and I would get very drunk and pretty much do harmonies for a lot of it. Because the thing is, I'm not good at vocals. My brother tends to drum, and I tend to play guitar. But get enough drinks in us, and you know, we'll actually try the singing, which is very good fun, but you get very self-conscious about.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, like to switch it up, but yeah, generally it's sticking to guitar for me.
But no, I enjoyed this one. It's fun.
Yes, yeah, it was a good fun one. I loved the orbital lifts, like the visual of them was very cool. The Kelvin reference, it was like, aha, yeah, fine, you know, whatever. But remembering the animated series, like the old one, and how it managed to not only be incredibly low budget and incredibly cheap, but also present us with visuals you can't normally get in the TV shows.
Yeah.
And it's nice when you get that in the modern ones as well, you know? So yeah, it was very interestingly done, even with an extremely wacky kind of planet, you know, ultimately the wellness planet. How different are they from the ones from the place that tried to kill Wesley Crusher that time, you know? So it's like, okay, they're obvious comedy planet, but we've had previous with this,
yeah,
so that's fine.
We don't get as much telepathic babies in regular Trek, if I recall.
Not as many, but still above a non, you know, it's a non-zero amount.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so I'm gonna put the sand timer on myself as I quickly discuss Klingon D&D and D&D in general. Okay, so I'm going to apologize to everyone. Right, so. Right, this app-based GMing and all of that. This is something that people have warned about and worried about in the present day, going, oh no, like there was some fake news article about Wizards of the Coast want to have virtual GMs anyway and replace the GM as a thing. GMs are the ones spending most of the money, so no, they're not. But this kind of nonsense with your expansion packs to buy, like this is exactly the kind of thing that I kind of expect the new version of D&D to go down. Yes, we want season passes, we want, you know, microtransactions. They want to monetize the player base, which is why it feels less and less like actual role-playing games. And this, you know, it was fun as a kind of app-based board game, but this weren't an RPG that they were doing. Right, anyway, minute over.
It was basically the Star Trek VHS board game.
Yes, yeah, there were some nice moments like that, and I enjoyed the Star Trek, the Klingon adventure.
Sadly, we didn't get General Martok tell us to experience Beej.
No, that would have been wonderful. And we didn't. Well, that's the thing. They were saying about an expansion allowing Gowron, which would have been great fun. You know, just imagine those mad staring eyes a game for you.
I don't think you could do it in. I don't think you can replicate those eyes in animation.
God, no, not comfortably. What other expansions do you reckon there would have been for this game?
Would they all be Klingon related?
I don't know, because it's primarily a Klingon thing, so you'd probably mostly have that. But after they run out of the Klingon greats,
I think you could have like your own continuing like series of adventures about how Worf is the best, but also the worst at Klingon.
Oh God! Well, and this is all a Ferengi knockoff anyway.
So what do you think the Federation, or rather Starfleet, that they have intellectual property licenses?
Oh God, yeah, maybe like, they went with this because the Federation's lawyers are a lot more, you know, on the ball.
Because also, again, this is the stuff. This is the AI shit that you get warned about on Twitter.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, personally, I was like, oh God, what would they have done? Yeah, maybe they'd brought back Kavok from the Klingon Adventure board game. Again, played by Gowron. But yeah, that kind of thing of okay, in this expansion, you are Klingons who are boarding Enterprise, which has been successfully conquered by Kavok, and now you've got to take him down for the honor of the Empire, or like get the Duras sisters to have to deal with, because now there's two enemies, not just one. And yeah, the Klingons aren't going to press charges because their lawyers would be like, ah, this is a dishonorable argument. Fuck it, they can do it.
Or how about that? There's probably one about Vok from Discovery.
Yes.
Vok, no, Vok the albino is like the Drizzt Do'Urden of this Klingon role playing game.
Oh God, no. Oh, not Drizzt. Well, where everyone's playing as Vok this time now.
Or Drizzt Do'Urden, or as I know him, Elric Melniboné knockoff number 27.
Yeah. Drizzt, I swear, Drizzt is to blame for a plague of player characters all as the lone rebellious drow. All apart from my mate Piers, who was like, yeah, this guy's a drow. Yeah, he uses twin swords and all that. But no, fuck a guy up. Like, this guy's still pure villain. It's all right. He's a proper drow. So, okay, I kind of respect that a bit more now.
See that your party of like brooding rebel bad boys reminds me of this idea for a sketch I've always wanted to do, but never sure how it would end, which is a trailer for like a cop drama where every single member of the precinct is basically the loose cannon who doesn't play by the rules. So it's all just like Dirty Harry bursting into an office to scream out Dirty Harry for not breaking the rules.
Oh no.
It's like you don't have, it's fun, it's got a good concept, but like it has to have an ending, or else you become a Saturday Night Live sketch which goes on for 5 minutes too long.
Yeah, we can't have that.
We can't have that. But June has also gone on far too long.
Is it us?
It's us without talking about where we want to put this on the big list.
God damn, you're right. Okay, so yeah, this was a very good fun one. It managed to not only do its ongoing drama, but have a nice A and B plot as well. Yeah, this was a very nice, very competently done Star Trek. Is it better than the others? Let's see. 'Cause yeah, nothing we've done today has broken above episode 26. Is this one that good?
Is this better than the pilot?
Yeah, actually, at number 25, we have Second Contact, the pilot of it. I remember when I was talking about it on the, what is it, episode 8,
Yep.
recently uploaded to our YouTube channel. Check out Casual Trek on YouTube if you want to hear our voices, but you have to have a screen involved somehow. Yeah, I took a little bit of time to warm to the characters. Yeah, especially Mariner, who felt at that point like she was trying to be the kind of wacky American dad, family guy kind of type character.
See, I. She always just strike in that first episode. She kind of strikes me as the Rick to Boimler's Morty, because
Yes.
you can't get that Rick and Morty smell off the Lower Decks pilot.
No, sadly not. So I would say for that, and this managing to be both funny and juggle two ongoing stories and characters' ongoing development, I would put this above Second Contact.
And so then next question. Is this better or worse than the closest Lower Decks episode, which is Where Pleasant Fountains Lie, which is currently number 19, but also has LARPing, but mostly has evil Jeffrey Combs playing an evil computer?
Oh shit. Yeah, Combs bot. I think that one might just win out. Like, this
Yeah.
has a cool set piece with the dive, but there are a couple of points where that feels a little Like, for running up, I get that that's a protracted long segment just to emphasize how much Mariner needs to get all the way up. And you know, again, it could have been solved with a quick bing from Boimler with his whole being hunted by Crunch. But, yeah, I think this is, in my opinion, lower than where Pleasant Fountains
are. Okay, now, here is the true cool question. Mm-hmm. Is this better than rank 22, which is the Andorian incident from Enterprise, which is currently the highest ranking episode of Enterprise on the big list?
Oh, yeah, I saw that there, and I knew you were going to make me be mean. I knew it. Yeah, it's better than the Andorian incident.
Ooh, sorry, okay.
A good Enterprise episode.
All right, okay. So, are we putting this at number 22?
I think so. It's not as good or relevant as Data Law, which
is
that. But yeah, I think this is a better one than the Andorian incident. That feels mean. One day we'll find a good Enterprise episode.
And so with that, Almoraine!
We have
moved along home.
We have. In fact, the final thing to move us along home is to wrap up and say where we can be found. So, first of all, we can be found on Ko-fi. You can find that in the show notes. If you want to suggest an episode, even maybe a good Enterprise episode to prove to us it can be done, then go there, throw us a few gold pieces, and suggest an episode, and we'll add it to our list. And we are, of course, fixtures on the Nerd and Tide Discord, where you'll see us having the occasional rant or rave about Picard Season 3. Speaking of which, Miles, where can we find you online? I believe you've been talking about Picard Season 3.
I have been talking about Picard Season 3. I have been doing weekly reviews. The one for Episode 4 is not up yet because life. But that's currently on my blog, The Infinite Bookshelf, which is at mareedlobato, that's one word, .wordpress.com. And there we go.
Yeah, so I can be found on fakedtales.com, where I'll be talking about RPGs and comics and things, including very soon, hopefully, the Kickstarter for Explosion High Issue 2. So that's all very exciting. So next time we're doing something a little special, given we've been witnessing some fun games here, we're going to play a nice choose-your-own-adventure Star Trek next time with Voyage to Adventure. How many times will I die in that? It's quite a few, as it turns out.
It was quite a few.
It was.
But like with Chula, in the end, it was all a game. There was no threat. And thus, to play us out, I will say once more, Alamoraine!
Alamoraine!
Out of that, live long, go to a Starfleet, and have an Alamoraine!
Casual Trek is part of the Nerd and Time Network, and you've heard a bunch from Alamoraining. In order, they are Charlie Etheridge Nunn and Miles Reed-Lovato, both from Casual Trek, Sean Corse from Two Boobs with the Tube, The Meat Grinder, and Famicom Dojo, Trey Dawn from Nerd and Tie, BS3 Witchcraft, On This Day with Trey, Stormwood and Associates, and The Meat Grinder, Celeste Startwin from the Nerd and Tie podcast, Celeste is Best, Stormwood and Associates, and The Meat Grinder. Not Alamoraining today is my brother, Alfred Etheridge Nunn, who made the opening theme tune, which Miles and I trampled all over with our Alamoraine. Sorry, bro.